You may notice that I got my first official haircut in 14 months. I've had my wife do it. Blessings to her, but it's not the same. My vaccinations are complete, just in time for Lag BaOmer and haircuts. And I know that many of us are falling into that same situation. And I hear that just as we had anxiety at the beginning of quarantine and throughout various periods of it, springtime anxiety about what comes after quarantine is overtaking many of us. Coincidentally, when the ground reaches 64 degrees Fahrenheit, it will also be the 17-year cicada season. Cicadas appearing in prime number cycles and evolving into particular prime number cycles, 13, 11, and 17-year cycles to evade predators. I think there are also 19-year cicadas. Just like Shabbat, for a variety of reasons, is also prime number based. These are, to cite our parasha, Mikra'e Kodesh, sacred events, these holiday cycles and cycles of Shabbat. They are the events that importune upon us and regulate our seasons and weeks and months. And as we return slowly, bit by bit, to movie theaters, concerts maybe, restaurants, the community of the synagogue, and plan for return to Minyanim in person, God willing, Shabbatot in person, there is a lot to come. And I know there's anxiety about what will come. And I think the anxiety stems from this recognition that not all has been bad in the past year. If you could extract the death and disruption for many with whom I speak, there's a powerful sense of control over one's time and a powerful sense of having time to think. And especially for introverts, a wonderful experience of silence and stillness more than usual. So I want to encourage us to think, as Parshat Emor is so much about the regulation of time, so much about seasons, and again, weeks, and to an extent, months. The pieces of time that, regardless to the end of quarantine, and regardless to the changes that will arrive as we conclude the most severe periods of quarantine and restriction, we still control that, to an extent, our destiny is our own, and our minutes and hours, often, not always, are things that we can measure, and things that we don't need to measure out with coffee spoons. Nonetheless, to point out, as the Parsha does, and the Or HaChaim, who is Chaim ibn Attar, writing in Morocco about three centuries ago, the Torah was worried and might think that we thought we were in control of all of the times, but it was very clear that Shabbat is not. There are pieces of our life that happen whether we want them to or not. So people have to clock in at work. People have to put their kids to bed at certain times. People have to check in with their mom or sister on a regular schedule. People have family Zooms. I wonder if those will continue. I suspect they will to a degree. And there are appointed seasons, to use the words of the parasha. There are things that are fixed. And those also can be a source of comfort. I know for many, the continuity of ritual, the continuity of liturgy, and the consistency of calendar are sources of great comfort. I don't think it's a source of great comfort to know that Passover cleaning is coming again and again every year, but most other things are very comforting. But also there's an awareness in the parasha that a lot of time is at our own discretion. And whether we use our time mindfully, whether we are fully present to it, whether we contain within ourselves an awareness of the joy and the preciousness of each moment is up to us. And for many, I think, especially early in the pandemic, the awareness of the imminence or the persistence and ubiquity of death and illness made us more aware of our own gratitudes, made us more aware of the preciousness of life, even by ourselves with a book and also with children, family, parents, loved ones. For me, I've taken a lot more walks with friends and have deepened relationships, and I think that's probably true of many people. One of the mitzvot, the strangest mitzvot in the Torah, is this week where you should be happy on Sukkot. And the sages ask, how can you enjoin people? How can you command people to be happy? But so much of joy and affect is in some strange way in our control. What do we focus on? What do we become most aware of? Just as during the Blitz in London during World War II, there was a great awareness among many Brits that they were lucky to survive each bombing. And that made them more brave and courageous in the face of the Nazi onslaught. And so a brush with death can make us more joyful and more aware of the passing of time and the preciousness of each moment. And the Chidushei HaRim, who is Yitzhak Meir Alter, I think the first of the Ger Rebbe's about 200 years ago, says that these times, these Moadei Kodesh, these Mikra'ei Kodesh, these sacred events, draw us and lure us towards holiness. I don't know what internal changes have happened to each of you in the past year. I can imagine there are many and varied and uncountable. For some of us, it was a drawing inward. For some of us, it was a drawing outwards to those we love. For some of us, it was a time to read. For some of us, it was a time to fear and to acknowledge our mortality and multitudes and myriad of other ways to experience the last 14 plus months with grieving, with celebration. But there is something that draws us forward through difficulty and the ways in which time can be rendered holy or profane. That some of the words that appear again and again in this parsha, like last week's Tuma and Tohara, I think it was actually 2 weeks ago, is Mikadesh and Chilel, to make things sacred or to make things unsacred, to make them, to use a common word, profane, but to desacralize them is more accurate. That we have a choice. And the priests of ancient times were there to tell us what was sacred, what was profane, what was ritually appropriate, what was not, to use words Tuma and Tohara. But there is a principle by the rabbis that we should always ascend in sanctity and never descend. That you always save your best for Shabbat. You always ascend to higher moments of sanctity in life. And whether life is short or long, sometimes that's just a trick of perspective. We should always be making efforts to become more whole, more holy, more complete, more self-aware, more joyful and grateful. Through all the vicissitudes, the 10,000 pains and the 10,000 delights of life. And we can, to use another verb from the parsha, be yinazru, scrupulous about this, scrupulous about the ways in which we structure our time. Scrupulous and diligent, even ferocious, I would say, to hold on to moments, to make our time our own, to find time just to think, to find time for a long walk. I can't explain the process. Among the many things I've learned this year for myself and others is that having time to think makes us better employees, makes us better spouses, makes us better parents and children. It pays dividends. So taking whether it's 10 minutes to think quietly, stare out the window as Bill Gates and Jack Welch used to do, to read, to go for a long walk, to meditate, whatever your practice is, to pray, that those times of quiet are things I want to, and I believe many of us want to hold on to. And it is paradoxically in this week's parasha in our control that most of the holidays, unlike contra to what I said about Shabbat, most of the holidays are human-made and human-decreed. The Akedat Yitzhak, who is Isaac ben Moses Arama in Spain in the end of the Jewish period in Spain in the 15th century, recognized in the construction of the holidays that everyone knew how to calculate lunar and solar orbits, that it was ancient information. No one missed out when the moon was there. And very early on, ancient peoples were able to construct the length of a year to a fairly high degree of accuracy. So it would seem that it's irrelevant whether humans, and in the case of Jews, the Sanhedrin, the great courts in Jerusalem, would declare when the new month was, would declare when Shavuot was coming, would declare the proper day for Pesach, would declare the correct day for Rosh Hashanah. But says the Akedat Yitzhak, God defers to us. God asks us what day it is. God lets us set the calendar, if not the week, but the calendar. When an earthly ruler promulgates a law, says the Akedat Yitzhak, his parliament can't revoke it. The king is at liberty to cancel that decree. Not so with God. God accommodates God's self to the laws enacted by the Sanhedrin. If the Sanhedrin decides to proclaim New Year's on a particular day, whether God was ready or not, God assembles the heavenly court to sit in judgment. Not to be fearful, but to indicate God sets God's calendar to our calendar, not the other way around. Which I think implies in this day and age that time is what you make of it. There are, I don't know, 24 hours a day and 168 hours in a year, but those are arbitrary constructions. That you can lose track of time if you're spending time with a friend and not know how many minutes and hours have passed, staring out at the sky, counting the stars. You can lose track of time during a meteor shower. You can lose track of time in love. You can lose track of time in a good book or a novel. That's a good thing. And the Mishneh Torah, Maimonides' law code of the medieval period, highlights this even more strongly, underlines this principle, that if the court, the Sanhedrin, any court, any human body, sanctified the new moon, which is the basis of all of our calendar, erroneously, incorrectly, or just forcibly wrong, the sanctification sticks. It remains valid, and everyone has to fix the festivals in accordance with the day in which the new members of the court sanctified the new moon, especially the new moon for Rosh Hashanah. Even if someone knows, and presumably it could be someone inside the court or outside the court, even if someone knows that they made a mistake, all must rely on their decision because the authority in this matter rests only with them. So as we prepare inch by inch, step by step, falteringly, to return to some normalcy, which I think as we in the synagogue know, given all the many changes we are preparing for, there is no status quo ante. There is no returning to the life that was. I imagine that Zoom is with us for good, Zoom or Microsoft Teams or some software that does not yet exist. I mean, imagine it. Think about it. We live in the world of Star Trek now. We do video conferencing all the time. This is the fantasies of our youth, was that there would be people we could talk to on a screen. We assumed it would have to happen in starships, but it's here now. So we're not going back. There's no going back, just as we know within the congregation. There's no exactly going back to our synagogue just for the sake of its bricks and mortar. And there'll be a lot of click and mortar issues, and there'll be a lot of differences in one's schedule. One thing I noticed today, I read today in The Economist, they were talking about etiquette changes that are likely to come. And the most certain one to me listing that was no one's coming to work when they have a cold. Remember, you used to come to work when you had a cold? You had to do it anyway. You get all your colleagues sick, they'd bring it home to their kids and vice versa. No one's coming to work when they have a cold anymore. That's not fair. You could just as easily work from home. That'll be the day you have to work from home. So unless you work at Target or Amazon, you're not going to suffer it. And you're not going to induce that suffering on others. That'll be one easy, obvious change. But there'll be so many. And hopefully 90% or more of them will be for the good. That now that we have vaccines, and God willing, there won't be new iterations of the virus, but there are a lot of other zoonotic diseases out there. We'll watch what we touch in our office. We'll use more Purell than we had 14 months ago. But the time will be ours. And with all the anxiety that we feel about returning, maybe 14 months isn't enough to establish absolute new minhagim, new habits of being. But it's enough to give us a taste that time is what we make.